This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Chris O'Brien is on special assignment, or whatever he calls it. We've got Michael Allen again. And we were spending a few minutes acclimating Michael to better microphone techniques.
Yep.
And we told him, we warned him here, that if he doesn't follow those techniques or makes too much noise, you know, like typing. See, I can type like this.
I heard that, right?
If I type on a real text here, let me do that. Let me type a real text. This is me typing a real text. Do you hear me typing?
I barely. I don't hear you at all.
I'm using an Apple Magic keyboard.
Oh, that's right. You don't have this crappy PC that I have right now. Okay.
Right. That's how I get away with it. And Nick, of course, uses a interdimensional keyboard.
Interdimensional communication device, maybe, perhaps? I don't know.
Something like that.
Donna, hey.
Well, also, we never hear background noise with Nick. We always wonder about that.
The TV's on mute, and there's no music blasted out, but I could always change that if you want me to.
No, I think we'll deal with that some other lifetime. So, we have Art Bell died on Friday the 13th. You were on Art Bell's show a number of times, right?
Not that I remember, no.
You were never on Coast to Coast?
Well, Coast to Coast, but not with Art Bell, no.
Ah.
I've done it with, like, George Norrie and George Knapp, and I did Heather Wade when she did, what was that show, Midnight in the Desert, that Art had some contacting or something. But anyway, no, I've never actually been interviewed by Art Bell himself, no.
Maybe you were too young, because he retired about 26 times during the course of his radio career, and that was always weird. He'd have some kind of personal problem. I gotta retire, folks. And then a few months later, he's back. And then he retires again.
And Gene, how do you know that so exactly? 26.
He retired a few times, I think. I didn't really catalog it, but it seemed like it was an endless retirement thing. So he comes back on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. That sounds like a pretty good gig. And it ends up that he quits after a few weeks because of some contract issues. Now, let's put Sirius XM in perspective. When they were really getting big, they paid Howard Stern $400 million. $400 million.
That's not bad.
No, that was more than Rush Limbaugh. He was probably the number one highest paid radio talk show host on the planet, at least this planet. I don't want to get into that. That's really too ridiculous. So you have no pithy observations to make about Art Bell. I guess because you weren't really that active in those years. When did you fully become active as a paranormal writer, researcher?
I don't know if it's so much that, because I started doing research, I guess, sort of late 80s. But bear in mind, I didn't move to the US until 2001. And so, you know, I don't know when Art Bell was around in the 90s. Was he around in the 90s doing his show?
Yeah, he was primarily in the 90s and the early 2000s. Things went
awry. Oh, well,
awry.
That's probably why, because, like I said, I didn't move to the US until 2001. And you know, I never listened to any of his shows when I was back in England. I'm not even sure they were broadcast back then, you know, in the UK.
That's all right. I didn't start listening to him until I was immersed in writing books on technology. And my hours got to be really weird. They were weird when I was young, but I was a more respectable, mature person when I was working as a writer in the 90s, and I would be up early to finish a book, and I turn on the radio, and there was Art Bell with his cast of characters. you know, Richard Hoagland and all these other people. Let's talk dice here. All right. The book that you came out with recently is called The Slender Man Mysteries. When I think of Slender Man, I think of a superhero who's very thin. And he kind of sneaks beneath the windowsills or something. But that's not obviously what Slender Man is. It's some kind of urban legend. Can you tell us the origins of Slender Man?
Yeah. Well, the Slender Man phenomenon, if you like, began in the summer of 2009. And it was thanks to a contest created by the guys at a website called Something Awful. And the idea was to see who could come up with the best, weirdest, creepiest creature, if you like, or entity for the internet era. And the plan was to sort of, you know, come up with like a modern day equivalent of Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees all combined into one, sort of like a modern day boogeyman kind of thing. And numerous people entered this contest, and essentially it was sort of, you know, creating artwork and pictures and things like that and uploading them to the website and seeing who was getting the best feedback and, you know, which entities, created entities, looked the coolest and the creepiest. One of the people who took part in this contest was a guy named Eric Knudsen. And Eric Knudsen was the guy who came up with the image and the name of the Slender Man. By his own admission, Eric Knudsen was inspired by the work of H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, Tales of the Men in Black, even an obscure MIB-type story, which I'm sure Gene might have heard of from the 40s, the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, this sort of creepy character roaming around the town of Mattoon, Illinois, in the 1940s, sort of tall, thin guy in a black suit. So he had all these different things, these different aspects, if you like, that were combined to create this 7 to 9 foot tall, faceless creature with tentacles coming out of its body and a man in black type suit. And you've got the Slender Man. So that's how it was created. But what happened almost immediately was that the Slender Man went from being just sort of this internet creation to something that thousands of kids and teenagers became fixated and obsessed with, to the extent that within days there were sort of forums, chat rooms, there was an online 20-minute, 30-minute episode show called Marble Hornets, which was like a found footage type movie but condensed down into short episodes. And, it ran for, you know, dozens and dozens of episodes. You had Wikipedia pages, people posting their own artwork of the Slender Man, their own stories online, people creating Kindle books on the Slender Man. A few months after that, people then claimed to start seeing the Slender Man in the real world, this idea like of thought forms. In other words, the idea if enough people focus their mind on one particular thing, you can create like a supernatural equivalent of the fictional entity just by sort of the hive mindset bringing it to reality, if you like.
So it's going to be like an evil version of the collective unconscious, then.
Yeah, but like a Tolper, a thought form, you know, even go back to things like, the movie Forbidden Planet, where, you know, you have Dr. Morpheus, I think, and...
Dr. Morbius, I think.
Dr. Morbius, that's right. Morpheus is in the Matrix. Dr. Morbius, where, you know, he goes into the dream state, and suddenly the monster imagery of these long dead aliens comes to life and starts to slaughter the astronauts that have come to take him home. This concept of thinking things into life is sort of one that, you know, you can find in a lot of different cultures and theories. And, that's one of the things I kind of dig in quite deeply in the book to try and determine or at least explain or rationalize how something that we know for 100% certainty was a fictional internet creation. But, you know, then you have to sort of figure out, well, how the hell has it gone from that to being something that people are now reporting in the real world?
We've got a lot more to come. Slender Man. That sounds like a good subject for a movie, too. We have Nick Redfern, author of the book on the subject. Our guest co-host is Michael Allen. You're in
the Paracast. podcast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Ted Anderson telling you about Jordan Rubin's Beyond Organic Green-Fed Raw Cheddar Artesian Cheese featuring whole milk created through ancient dairy breeding. Unpasteurized, untreated whole milk on the same farm the cows graze. Containing natural sources of omega-3s, CLA protein, calcium, probiotics, and enzymes. I have never tasted cheese this good, and you need to try it. Contact your longevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.
Join me, George Norrie, in Indian Wells, California, June 1st through the 4th for the Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, an epic weekend of exploration into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, and UFO sightings. More than 100 lectures, panels, workshops, and events with leading experts Giorgio Tsoukalos, David Wilcock, Linda Moulton-Howe, Eric Von Doniken, Corey Good, Doc Wallach, and more. Get tickets at contactinthedesert.com. It's time to make contact. Contactinthedesert.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
You see, Michael is learning how to be a crack broadcaster. As long as he's not on crack, we'll accept him here.
That's a good thing. That's a good way to say it.
Right. We're telling him how to get a really good microphone. I found a good bargain for him, and he's going to have the best microphone on the planet real soon. The book is The Slender Man Mysteries by Nick Redfern, How an Urban Legend becomes something apparently real. But the thing I would worry about, of course, in terms of the skeptical approach here, Nick, is even if some people say, hey, this is real, there's a real phenomenon here, how do we know they're not pulling our leg?
Well, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people, particularly since the book was published, who claim to have seen the Slender Man. I honestly don't think they were hoaxing or just, you know, crazy. But I think a point can be made that in some cases, you know, imagination and reality cross in sometimes in strange and weird ways, and particularly when you're in the dream state as well, where a number of witnesses claim to have had their experiences in the middle of the night. So I think there's definitely that aspect to it. The ones that kind of interest me even more are where people, you know, literally claim to have seen the Slender Man in the woods, etc., or following them late at night, that kind of thing, when they're clearly not in that state. I mean, the number of people who claim to have seen the Slender Man and have had their lives adversely and dangerously affected by the Slender Man phenomenon is pretty large. It's one of the intriguing but also disturbing things about all this is that if it is just all some sort of mass psychosis, it's taken on incredible proportions to the point where it's literally kind of ruined lives and families. So even if it is, which I don't think it is, but even if it is just something, you know, out of the imagination, then there is a massive phenomenon still at work.
Well, I'd like to go back to what you said earlier when you were talking about the formation of the reality by focusing on it. And there was a book that I read, and I don't ask me what the name is. I'll have to go through the numerous books that are on my bookshelf, but it's basically a book on Kabbalah mysticism. It's Western mysticism. It talks about forming the thought while you're doing the Western meditation, aligning your chakras and all of this stuff. It is very weird, but at the end, it explains a procedure that you can go through, and it's very much something like you'd read out of The Golden Dawn, where you visualization and you form your hands and you can create an entity like an angel or whatever. It doesn't matter. An intelligent entity by repeating this ritual over and over again until your mind accepts that as something that is externalized. And I find that extremely fascinating. That kind of goes into what you're saying, is that when you get enough people, they feed off of each other and they form and they somehow in some way externalize the reality within their brains into the physical environment, or at least what they think is, and it becomes a shared experience. And I think that is very fascinating.
No, I mean, that sort of goes straight down the path that, you know, I think is the right one. When you talk about the Golden Dawn and everything, I mean, a lot of this does tie in with some of Crowley's early work and sort of latter-day stuff into things like chaos magic. When you kind of look into this angle of bringing things to life, I mean, I'll give you two examples, one, an old one, and one, a relatively new one, to demonstrate how this doesn't just relate to things like the Slender Man. One of the most sort of famous stories is the story of a woman named Alexandra David Neal. And she was kind of like a 19th century through 20th century equivalent of someone like Indiana Jones. You know, she traveled around the world having all sorts of adventures and getting into scrapes, etc. She spent a lot of time in Tibet, where she learned the concept of the tulpa, as it's known in Buddhist teachings, or the thought form. And she became fascinated by this and endeavored on to try and create her own thought form. And she focused on the image of, like, the Friar Tuck character from the Robin Hood stories. So he's like this sort of jolly kind of fat monk with a brown kind of outfit and a hood. And she visualized him in a sort of an altered state of mind, got herself in a trance-like state, and spent weeks and then months trying to visualize and create this entity. When it started to work, she saw this vague, shadowy figure out of the corner of her eye. But then, as time progressed, it became more sort of physical, if you like, to the point where she said she could actually see it. Everything was fine for a short period of time when suddenly something very strange and kind of disturbing began to happen. What that was that this sort of jolly, fat, Friar Tuck type character began to change. What happened was that the chubby, round face became more lean with cheekbones, and the smile that he had, which was kind of a jolly smile, became more like, I guess, a smile you might have seen like in Jack Nicholson in The Shining, something like that.
The Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland.
And what happened from there was that something that Alexandra David Neal was warned about, that when these thought forms become more and more powerful, they become more and more self-aware to the point where they are self-aware and they fear, if you like, being deconstructed by the creator. So they then turn the tables on the creator to try and kill them in an effort to make sure that they cannot be, you know, deconstructed or disintegrated. So that's one. That case goes back to the 1930s. Now, a more updated one, which kind of relates to a lot of one issue, if you like, that a lot of people have an interest in, sort of comic books, relates to a famous British comic book writer named Alan Moore. Now, Alan Moore, to give you an idea of just a couple of the things he created the Constantine character in the comic books and the movie of the same name, the movie with starring Keanu Reeves. He also created the V for Vendetta character, which was also became a hit movie. Now, Alan Moore, as a comic book writer, you know, when he was putting together the character of Constantine, who, for people who don't know, in the movie and in the comic books, he's sort of like an assassin who goes out assassinating demons. And he visualized how Constantine would look. Now, he actually focused on the idea of having Constantine look like Sting from The Police. So he had sort of spiky blonde hair, kind of thin, et cetera, et cetera. And he had him in sort of like a black outfit and visualized him like that, even though in the movie, you know, Keanu Reeves looks very different. But for a long time, Alan Moore was focusing on this image of Constantine. He wanted to get him exactly right, you know, his character, his looks, everything. Then something really strange happened, as it did with Alexandra David Neal. One day, Alan Moore, and he's gone on record with this, I should stress, Alan Moore said one day, not long after he was sort of visualizing Constantine, he was sitting in a restaurant on the River Thames in London, England, and he saw, coming right towards him, the Constantine character that he had seen.
We will learn more about Constantine. Is he Matt Ryan? I will tell what that means soon. With Gene and Michael and Nick, you're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
Childhood is full of wonder, and we get the chance to relive it with our grandchildren every day. But imagine missing special moments with a grandchild or seeing them through cloudy vision. The Foundation Fighting Blindness can help by providing valuable information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Age-related macular degeneration is the leading cause of vision loss in people 55 and older, but it doesn't have to be. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is driving research and saving sight by providing information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Don't miss a moment of your grandchildren's youthful wonder because of poor vision. Learn more about vision-saving preventions and treatments. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website fightblindness.org where you can find so much helpful information. Call 1-800-BLINDNESS today. That number again is 1-800-BLINDNESS or fightblindness.org.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I've heard of Stuck in Overdrive, but this is ridiculous. Nick, you're familiar with Matt Ryan, right?
Yes.
Matt Ryan is the guy who plays Constantine on TV.
And? My brain just had a Stack Overflow, Gene. What are we talking about? I think he just performed some magic on us. What do you think? Real magic, you know?
That was the topic of last week's episode.
Are we allowed to talk about last week's episode now?
Briefly.
Briefly. Well, we're not going to talk about it if you're going to say briefly. I just said if I mentioned something, it's kind of interesting. It might dovetail into what we're talking about right now. I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Well, basically, as I said, Alan Moore was focusing on creating this character of Constantine, focusing on it, thinking about it, visualizing it. And then one day, having lunch on the river, in a restaurant on the River Thames in London, England, he saw what he said was the Constantine image that he created, and it strode towards him in the restaurant with this sort of conspiratorial, slightly menacing smile or grin on its face. He didn't know what to do. He was almost like frozen. And then he walked past him, and Alan Moore just did not get up. He didn't know what to do. So that's like two perfect examples of dozens and dozens where creating something has an extremely negative effect on the creator, whether inadvertently or deliberately created. I talk about all this in the book with a Constantine angle and demonstrate how it can be paralleled with what's going on now with the whole Slenderman thing.
Well, let me just throw this out there because you mentioned the grin several times, and I keep going back to the fact that if you've ever showed your teeth to a dog, how quickly an animal will respond to it if they don't know you personally. And grinning and showing your teeth, from an evolutionary perspective, that seems very significant to me. And there may be a mechanism there in the collective unconscious that survives for ages that has come into that experience, that human experience. And I'm wondering what you think about that, because that's what I keep thinking about when you mention the grin.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that, because, you know, sort of that kind of creepy grin, you know, is something I guess everybody can kind of relate to. And, you know, Gene may know that there is this sort of kind of subcategory in the world of paranormal that's known as the grinning man. One of the most famous grinning men was an entity that surfaced in the Mothman phenomenon of 1966 to 1967 called Ingrid Cold, which kind of sounds like some sort of weird Charles Dickens type character, but the Ingrid Cold was like this man in black type character with this sinister grin on its face. And, you know, you can find so many of those. You know, when a smile is presented in a way where it looks like you're about to be chopped up by an axe, that kind of image is actually quite disturbing, you know, a smile which doesn't really look like a smile.
Well, it's showing your teeth. If you do it to a dog, the dog will growl at you. And I've done it many times to prove to somebody that a dog, you know, somebody says, this dog will never hurt anybody. And I pull on my best, for lack of better term, whatever, eating grin, that dog bolts backwards. And, you know, when you show your teeth, it's like you're showing your weapon. From an evolutionary perspective, it makes sense that that would be something that is stuck in our background, in our reptilian brain.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I think it's kind of almost like a primal thing where there are certain things that we all relate to in our subconscious, which suddenly at times, you know, come forward when we don't normally think about them, but it's just something innate within it. It's kind of like, you know, when you're talking about dogs, when a female dog gives birth to the puppies, the dog instantly knows how to look after the dogs and feed them. It's something, you know, and we all have that angle in our minds as well of certain things which are archetypes within our minds and our subconscious, which are there no matter if it's the 21st century or 10,000 years ago. There are certain things which within our subconscious or our mind are always there. And I think that angle, like you say, baring your teeth, everybody knows what that means. And I mean, I was reading a story not too long ago about a tribe in South America that was one of these tribes, this back in the 30s, where they'd never met anybody from any other culture. When they were able to sort of start to speak to them a little bit, they nodded and shook their heads in the same way we do. Nod meaning something good, you know, a shake to the side, something bad or negative. And yet they never met anybody else, you know, any other tribes, any other people. But they had the same kind of approach to things as we do. So, you know, I think that's an important thing, you know, that sort of primal subconscious thing that affects everybody in pretty much the same way.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting to me. I mean, you see these things in different cultures. That's how you can independently verify that what you're dealing with has a common source that is meaningful and not something that is just passed around like a meme. That kind of segues into what I was thinking about the Slenderman thing, because it started out as kind of a joke on something awful. And I happen to know a few of the people that were on that forum. And I know their behavior, their whole outlook, they're extremely cynical group of people. They're just going to create something for the purpose of creating something that self-replicates in the humans, you know, in the social collective psyche. But once the group of people get together, the question is that what is there that's actually real that's been created, and one is probably slipstreaming or connecting with something before that takes on that form? That's what I'm wondering. I mean, it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, I mean, were you talking about something that kind of like pre-existed, you mean?
Yeah, you have something that somebody creates, and maybe they create it because it's already in the background in their collective unconscious. Yeah. But it connects to something physically real that maybe would have existed, you know, in the past. This is what we're talking about is very complicated, maybe very complicated.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good point you bring up, because there are or there is good evidence or good data at least to suggest that maybe the Slender Man, we know for sure the name the Slender Man and the specific image of the faceless face and the tentacles and the suit, we know for sure that was created by Eric Knudsen. But in saying that, you know, you can find sort of very similar things that had different names throughout history. I mean, in Germany, they have one called Der Grossmann, which has actually been incorporated into a lot of the fictionalized stories surrounding the Slender Man. You can even go back to the centuries-old, literally centuries and centuries-old folk tale of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, which is this sort of story for kids, but which is actually quite disturbing and dark, where you have this tall, thin, strange-looking character who comes into the German town of Hamelin and offers to rid the town of all its infestation of rats. So he pulls out this supernatural flute, which when he starts to play it, it hypnotizes all the rats. They follow him to the river and they're all drowned. Then the mayor of Hamelin refuses to pay the piper the amount of money that he promised him. The piper, this tall, skinny figure, decides to get his own back, and he starts playing the flute, and he hypnotizes all the children in the town, and they follow him into the woods, and then they vanish into like a portal into the side of a mountain. That sounds incredibly like a lot of the issues surrounding the Slender Man. You've got the tall, skinny figure who's dangerous to children, who lurks in the woods and hypnotizes children and takes control of them. That's very much like the Slender Man. So, yeah, you can find these archetypes, sort of ancient archetypes. For example, Native American lore, they have one known as Walking Sam. Again, a sort of predatory, dangerous, tall, skinny figure. So, again, that imagery may be sort of embedded in our subconscious and possibly Eric Knudsen, we know he created the Slender Man, but how much of it is sort of developed from imagination or how much is developed from, you know, your subconscious, but in an unknowing way?
Indeed, when you look at the being itself, you know, I'm looking at the cover of the book. You see the faceless man with these tentacles and these arms, and I wonder, can you test your theory about whether or not this is a physical or a psychic phenomenon by just simply looking at the fact that the individual or the being in question homologically doesn't make sense from an evolutionary perspective?
More to come with Nick and Michael and Gene. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Healthcare reform is confusing, but whether it's finding an affordable insurance plan, keeping your doctor, or being able to afford needed prescriptions, navigating the healthcare system has become a challenge. Control your own healthcare costs and choices with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It is an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share the cost of each other's medical needs. Neighbor helping neighbor. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Hey everyone, Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com. And enter promo code radio. You heard right. Proactive MD plus free shipping and a free gift. The new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95 and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now. 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. Again, go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Nobody on this planet will match Nick Redfern.
Yeah, that's correct, because he calls the Stack Overflow in my brain, which I think is a magical ability.
He called John Constantine.
Are we live?
We're Memorex.
Okay.
You may continue, sir.
We'll go back to the homology of the creatures involved. I mean, like, for instance, when you look at him, it's like a cross between a human and a horse as a centaur. And when you look at that, there's no creature in the evolutionary lineage that ever looked like that or ever had that bone structure. In other words, you'd have to do some, if you look at every creature, and homology is, by the way, an extremely interesting branch of zoology, and it's something that I think that every cryptozoologist should pay attention to, because I think it gives you hints as to whether or not something that you're looking at is something that is created as a kind of a psychic confabulation or created reality that's externalized versus something that in prosaic terms is something that could exist. And, you know, you think about the number of body forms that have evolved over the centuries and the millennia and the millions of years and how each leads to the next. You know, like, for instance, the horse actually has a thumb. It's a little knob that goes up way up on. I don't know if you've ever looked at a horse, but it has a thumb, but it's a knob. Okay. And its hoof is what corresponds to the middle finger of a human being. And I mean, this is the science of homology and evolutionary theory. And so, you know, you look at a bat's wing, you see there are five appendages on each wing. You see the thumb, you see the same kind of the metacarpal, but it's lengthened. Everything is according to what you would, and you could take and you could continuously deform in the same way you would continuously deform a coffee cup into a, you know, a donut, right? Because they're topologically equivalent. And in the same way, you can deform a bat's skeletal structure into a human being by shortening or lengthening or whatever of the different skeletal element. And I wonder, because I know cryptozoologists are interested in these different forms, and whether or not they're physical or they're something that comes out of human imagination. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, a case could be made that, I mean, a lot of things, you know, within the field of cryptozoology and different phenomena could be thought form. If you look at lake monsters, you find stories of lake monsters all around the world. I mean, certainly the most famous ones are like Nessie and Ogopogo and Champ and things like this. But if you think about it, if you go into the ocean for a swim or whatever, it doesn't, you know, let's say you just go on vacation somewhere, you're swimming in the ocean. There's this part of you thinks that, well, you know, I can't see this water too well. I wonder what's down there. And kind of like you've got a spooky-looking lake surrounded by mountains and forests and crumbled old castles. And you look out at the lake and you think, I wonder what's lurking in there. So in other words, I sometimes wonder if lake monsters, you know, this angle of the human mind thinking, you know, this is a creepy-looking lake and the fog's coming over it. What's, you know, and it's 200 feet deep, what's lurking down there? I do sometimes wonder if, because we never catch any of these lake monsters, we never get solid evidence, well, maybe it's just the human mind, the sort of, the intrigue, the fear of what's lurking in the depths may actually create archetypal lake monsters. And then, of course, when the ball starts rolling and you've got four or five very famous ones, people then start to think, or they wonder what's in their local lake, and somebody else thinks what's in their local lake around the world. And I could easily see how it would become like a, almost like an infection, you know, just spreading far and wide.
Well, it's like you said in one of your last episodes, I mean, the Loch Ness Monster is not just one form, it's many forms. Mm. I mean, in one form, it was like a frog sitting on a shelf. And another form, you go back in time and you look at, you see different forms, but it's the same environmental situation. And I thought that was fascinating that you brought that out. That was
Let's not forget as well that none other than Aleister Crowley actually had a house almost on the shores of Loch Ness called Beleskin House. You know, he was involved in all sorts of. Yeah, it's called Beleskin House. He lived there for a number of years, and it burned down in 2016. But, yeah, I mean, he was involved in all sorts of rites and rituals at Loch Ness before the sudden wave began in 1933. So, you know, I think that's an important point to make. You know, when you're looking at, again, you know, this idea or this angle of how many of these strange phenomena might actually be in existence because we, in a strange way, willed them into existence. I mean, if you look at, for example, the Slender Man imagery that Eric Knudsen himself created, I mean, by his own admission, he was actually quite inspired by the works of H.P. Lovecraft. Now, I would be at all surprised if part of the imagery of the Slender Man that came from Lovecraft was the tentacles, you know, because Lovecraft created all these sort of tentacle-based, water-based monsters, you know, like Cthulhu, and by all accounts, Lovecraft had sort of an obsessive hatred or fear of, you know, things like octopus and things like that. And also, H.P. Lovecraft would talk about how in his quite vivid dreams, he would encounter these creatures he called the Night Gaunts, which would sort of take him high into the sky and then drop him to the ground in his dreams. But they didn't have faces. So I'm pretty sure that's where he got the faceless angle of the Slender Man from. But what's interesting is that by Lovecraft's own admission, a lot of the creatures and entities and ancient cities and ancient civilizations that he incorporated into his stories, he said he envisaged all this in his dreams and his nightmares, and he just put it down to having very visual dreams. But, you know, there's a school of thought today that thinks that Lovecraft may have been actually astrally traveling and creating these things out of the power of his mind, if you like, by actually seeing in an altered state real realms beyond ours, but then focusing them so deeply that he started to create real-world equivalents of them. And a good example of this, the Night Gaunts, these faceless creatures that he claimed to have seen in his dream state, well, if he was so inspired by them and came to believe in them, you'd expect somebody else would see them. And somebody else actually did, namely his mother. His mother said that she saw them on several occasions in a totally waking, everyday state, as if Lovecraft had dreamed about them and then was so obsessed with them, created them in the real world to the point where his mother on several occasions was able to see them. So, you know, you look at all these angles, the ties between the Slender Man and the Lovecraft angle and the dreams coming to life, and then the whole angle of, like, for example, Crowley working at Loch Ness and potentially, you know, creating directly or indirectly lake monsters. You can easily see how some of our weirder creatures and monsters spilling over into the world of things like chaos magic could actually create something of a highly dangerous nature, and the Slender Man may be sort of the definitive modern-day equivalent of what Lovecraft was doing and what Alexander David Neal was doing as well. But this one has a big difference because it has an incredible following of literally tens and tens of thousands.
You also have to throw in Medusa. I mean, that was the classic tentacled the thing that would terrify people. And I like what you said. You know, you said that, you know, what if these entities are terrifying people in order to suck the energy out of them, you know, because they get their, you get your adrenaline going up and somehow they feed off of that. And I thought that was interesting, that there's something terrifying in the human psyche about tentacles, about multiple appendages, spiders, arachnophobia, where you have multiple, I mean, why are spiders so scary to people? It's because they have so many arms and they're unpredictable.
We're unpredictable, too. You'll see this
in a
moment. We've got Nick Redfern. The book is The Slender Man Mysteries with Gene and Michael. You're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.